Welcome to The Procurement Show.
Hello and welcome to The Procurement Show, the show that tackles the topics we all need to think about and sets out to explore the more interesting bits of procurement. I'm Jonathan O'Brien.
And I'm Paul Philpott, and my role here is to sort Jonathan's screw collection this weekend.
And it's a mighty fine screw collection.
It's amazing,
it is.
Yes.
Nuts, bolts,
it's very much
countersunk.
You're a fan of Posi Drive, I see.
Posi Drive's
yes.
in there, lots of Posi
yes.
Drives.
And who is Philip anyway?
This week, it's time to face up to the fact that we all seem to be drowning in a bit of procurement tech. Bit, lot, maybe, huge amounts perhaps. So it's time to cut through all of that and find out what we need to be focusing on. And in particular, what is trending right now.
The Procurement Show is brought to you by Positive Purchasing, building exceptional procurement and negotiation the world over.
And to help us do that, I can safely say that our guest today knows all, I literally mean all, the procurement tech that is out there, because he studies everything that is in the market and has vast experience in procurement also. He's the Chief Research Officer and MD at Spend Matters, a market intelligence and tech advisory company founded in 2004 that focuses on the best of breed procurement tech. Please welcome to the Procurement Show, Pierre Mitchell. Pierre, hello, welcome. It's great to have you on board for this week's show.
I'm so excited to be here. I'm an ardent listener to your podcast. And, you know, I think it's the best one out there. And I'm not just saying that. So happy to actually be on the show.
Oh, wow. And checks in the post.
Yep. What a great start. So we'll be kind to you with the questions. So let's start big. What are the main trends in procurement tech right now?
Certainly, this should come as no shocker around AI, and we'll get into that. I would just say overall, in the current economic environment, guess what? Savings is still important and risk is important. Obviously, a lot of discussions right now around tariffs and geopolitical risk and a lot of scenario planning and a lot of focus there. And on the tech side, obviously, helping to enable some of that. Let's just say it's not going to be a solution that's going to solve all that problem, but that is front of mind. But certainly in terms of tech, being able to get an ROI on the investments around tech is certainly an important thing. AI is just a key enabler of that, and we can dive into AI. But I mean, the good and the bad news is there is a huge supply market of solutions that are out there, and it's kind of the good and the bad, right? It's like the universe is both expanding and contracting, right? But it's complicated. So welcome to my nightmare. Happy to share some of the insights around some of the trends that's going
on. Welcome to my nightmare. Actually, Pierre, would you say there's too much of it? Is there too much tech out there right now?
Well, I would say what's happening, right, is one of the reasons why there is such low barriers to entry right now is just what's happening with Gen AI. So anyone with access to, you know, any of the LLMs that are out there are just getting smarter and smarter, just suddenly got a massive brain implant that they can now utilize. And that's great for being able to do lots of things. And we could talk about the use cases. And there are a lot of providers that are using Gen AI for different use cases. They're going to dive into certain processes, certain categories, serving different markets, different approaches. So it's easy to get in. It's easy to pilot. There are a lot of them, especially ones that are PE funded, are able to kind of get in and do the land and expand. So it's great to pilot, demonstrate some value. But the question is this really a future-proof strategy?
Yeah.
And right now, the answer is probably no, because there is a lot of entrants that when they grow up, it gets harder to scale.
Yeah, and it's early days, I think, for a lot of these new entrants.
I was going to say, just a jargon bust, LLM, yep. That's looky, lurky, murky.
Yeah.
Yes, it is a large language model, which is built upon with the land of the gorillas and the AI folks, you know, the hyperscalers and the open AIs, scraping everything that's out there, indexing it, seeing all the deep patterns in the data and serving it up, building that model and serving up that foundation LLM that you can then use through apps like ChatGPT and other chat apps that allow you to talk to this massive corpus of data, which includes stuff about procurement. Now, your results will vary. Some hallucinations you may be getting from the technology, but that's good to know that the tech is hallucinating and not just an ex-deadhead like me. No, I'm kidding. It's a real issue you have to work through is how do you de-bias and get rid of those hallucinations? And we can talk about a little bit some techniques and tools.
I love what you just mentioned about hallucinating because we did a special on AI.
Yeah, we did.
And the experts that we had on mentioned hallucinating AI, and it goes against what you think computers do. You know, you're brought up to know that Excel's correct, the computer is right, it's never wrong, but hey, that's not the case anymore.
But it's also, we look at hallucinations as it's something bad, but it's actually part of a generative creative process where you let the machine make a mistake. Absolutely. Just like we do. It's just as a human.
I hallucinate all the time.
But if we do that, we'll hide it away, not show anybody. But ChatGPT will just serve it up and say, here it is. And you think, oh.
Well, like humans, it's trying to serve you, right? Yeah. It's trying to confidently tell you something that you're hoping to hear. And unfortunately, that confidence, it's a type 2 error in risk management. We won't dive into that. But that is the challenge. So there are techniques to reduce some of those hallucinations. Yeah. So for example, you may have heard of this thing called RAG, right? Doing the AI RAG, you know, retrieval augmented generation. The idea is you take your own trusted data out of your systems using, let's say, some internal search or queries or whatever. Then you combine that with the LLM so that it's using your data, but then enriches it and makes it so you can talk to your data. And that's what a lot of the tech providers are doing right now.
Yeah,
they're letting you talk to their systems by reducing it to a world of their data, but using the language models and chatbots to make it more accessible.
Wow. Yeah. I know what you're doing this weekend then.
Yeah. And our experience of doing that, because that's exactly what we're doing with Capella and Ruby, is it gives a different level of confidence when you're able to say, actually, this thing doesn't go out there and look at everything that's out there and push your data out there. It's within this walled garden environment, which suddenly makes it safer and you can experiment more and have more confidence in what happens in your data. So just to complete the set of acronyms here, GPT, do you know what that means?
No, what does GPT stand for?
Generative pre-trained transformer, right?
Oh, wow.
That is exactly right.
So the transformer-based...
Yes, you get kudos to Jonathan. The transformer is just a new architecture, a way of building these more sophisticated deep learning models that are basically predictive, whatever, text or images or something, you know, on steroids, if we will, just like Google type ahead, right? But obviously a lot more sophisticated. And it's been pre-trained with all of this data that they've pulled. And unfortunately, they've had to scrub some of the nasty bits off the internet so that folks can use it and try to be somewhat confident in the results that they're going to be using. We won't get into all the details about how those are all built, but you're using that generative capability on a pre-trained data set, these massive data sets, which is based on this transformer architecture, and then serving that up through an app like ChatGPT, which uses GPT in a chat format. And there's lots of them that are out there from Facebook and the hyperscalers and all that.
There's so much talk of AI and generative AI. We can talk about what it is, but who's actually using it to the point where it's doing something exciting? What are procurement doing here? And is what procurement is doing, is that better or behind what the rest of the organization's doing typically?
It's actually really interesting. Procurement is actually one of the more advanced users of this in different ways and for different reasons. So one is procurement is like woefully underfunded, right? But you got to deliver the 5x, 10x ROI, right? So you're always looking for something that can help you scale and augment what you're trying to do with using technology, especially when it's free or freemium or low cost. You want to see what it can really do. Where the action is one, there have been a lot of pilots around just using AI for some basic use cases for how do we help it take this crappy procurement policy that nobody reads, operationalize it, tie it in the systems that we use? It's a knowledge management thing. So if you basically take your data and you unstructured data, text data, and make better use of it. So policy is one. The other is things taking like contracts or invoices, but let's take contracts. Take all those contracts in your repository, run them through the AI, and it allows you to get deeper insights into them so that you can actually see not just renewal dates and things like that, but actually start to understand where are my contracts silent? Where are they all over the place with certain clauses? Mm-hmm. Really getting into the richness of the data that's in there, turning that text into actually structured data that is actionable. So there's a lot of focus in areas like that where you could actually get some ROI to identify risk or opportunities. So that's where there's a lot of work that's happening there. There's a lot of pilots that are out there coming at the enterprise level or working with IT to find a lot of these use cases. Now, how many of those will live on? I was talking to a CPO a couple of weeks ago, and they were like, yeah, we identified 500 use cases for Gen AI, and we've implemented 3 of them.
Yeah. Right? On that point, you've given us some examples of really good use cases, and we all use the language of what we could do this, we could do that. But do you think we are actually properly utilizing AI? Are we seeing the value of AI now? Or are we just still experiencing the hype?
You can call it hype, but think about the benefit of getting every single stakeholder knowledgeable and excited and actually using tools like the chatbots to actually understand the art of the possible. So now you can be like, hey, guess what? You know how ChatGPT works. Hopefully they got the basic understanding of it. Let's now apply it to XYZ. So it's great in the sense that your stakeholders are generally knowledgeable, but now you can actually say, great, let's actually start using this for some real use cases and things that are predictable. And that's the challenge of it, is the fact that it is such an early market. There are so many gorillas that want you to be in their domains. It's very much Game of Thrones, but that's the opportunity, is being able to take the general understanding and build things that are actually real. And it doesn't mean you have to do it yourself. What's happening is all the major suite vendors and the big source to pay vendors, they're baking a lot of this stuff in and trying to actually shield users from some of the complexity. They might not be able to shield all the cost for now with token pricing and all that kind of stuff, but at least they're trying to be able to say, look, we know you want to use this LLM, and in this use case, terrific. So they're starting to just build it in so that you can get some of those capabilities within analytics, within the data management, like you're talking about turning docs into data, within integration, a little bit on the low code. It's a little bit all over the place right now, but the good news is that the app vendors are just starting to build this in as just infrastructure. The bigger thing is that you need to think about is, what is going to be your longer term strategy about things like knowledge graphs and agents? And we can talk about these things, but a lot of folks are like, hey, agents, this is now autonomous procurement. Agents are going to do it all. 35 years ago, I started in college actually developing old school AI programming. And it's almost a return to those days right now. But you got another thing coming. If you think that that's going to be an easy strategy that is future proofed around just throwing agents at it, we can spend a lot of time talking about it. I would be very careful about what you do in that area.
I'm really encouraged to hear you say that, because there is still that need for the human in the loop to be able to do this properly. You know, we need to make sure that the aeroplane is flying itself okay, and to be able to intervene when something goes wrong.
And now it's time for this week's fun fact.
Today's fun fact comes from Peter Smith's book, Bad Buying. Back in 2004, here in the UK, a government project was set up to centralise the number of control rooms that handled emergency 999 or 911 type calls, as it felt that having 46 different control rooms throughout the UK wasn't the most efficient or best use of taxpayers' money. Talking of which, the project took 3 years to figure out that instead of 46, they just needed 9. And so in an 8-year, £200 million contract, they awarded the contract to EADS Defence and Security for the supply of a new IT infrastructure. Unfortunately, the programme went horribly wrong and was eventually scrapped in 2010. The fiasco led to one of the most critical investigations by the UK government, the National Audit Office, ever conducted, whose report read, "This is yet another example of a government IT project taking on a life of its own, absorbing ever-increasing resources without realising its objectives."
The fun fact. Contact us by email, hello@theprocurementshow.com, or connect with us on LinkedIn. Search for The Procurement Show. The Procurement Show is brought to you by Positive Purchasing. Unlocking the hidden value with your most important suppliers.
So I guess from what you've said, the question is, if some vendors are baking this stuff in, how do we tell where there's a real capability that's part of an app, part of something, or it's just a badge? Because it's really hard to distinguish those two right now.
Super hard. And I think one of the biggest things is you have to be educated and know the questions to ask, like when you're going through, welcome to my nightmare, right? As we bench test these apps, as we do consumer reports on steroids, the magic quadrant on steroids for racking and stacking these guys. So we build as much AI into our evaluative criteria for each of the 500 criteria. So we try to do that as much as we can, but you got to be specific. So like when you're looking at a demo and you're looking at some of the functionality and they're saying, oh, well, we do AI, you need to really ask exactly where you do doing AI, how are you doing it, with what LLMs, where are you syncing that up with the user experience and with the business logic that you would like to own? Because that's the real issue, right? Is that when you get into Gen AI, you're no longer in the world of nice, predictable, rules-based algorithms that you always know that 2 + 2 is going to equal 4. That's the challenge. And so it's useful to know where the vendor is saying, great, we have this thing that lets you talk to the data, or we're going to use that thing like that retrieval augmented generation, that RAG thing, to be able to say, great, it lets you now get you to the right form, get you to the right workflow. I guess the easiest way to explain it is large language models are out modeling data and deep patterns of any kind of data at a very low level, but it doesn't understand crap about procurement necessarily, right? But it's a good faker. And then you've got all your enterprise apps that have very structured relational database models. So we have data models and we have language models, but we don't have a knowledge model to connect these things. And that's why there's this area around knowledge graphs and basically more flexible data modeling that are key to bringing those worlds together. And that's where you need to ask hard questions of the vendors about where specifically are you using the LLMs and Gen AI in conjunction with your nice, predictable, normal workflow forms, business logic. So to understand how they interact, because as soon as you start embedding your corporate knowledge directly into an LLM, that's a bad strategy because we don't know what's going to happen with the market and all these mega players that are out there. So make sure you focus on your data modeling and connecting the dots between the world of AI and the world of your traditional business systems.
You quite rightly say be careful about how they interact, but maybe one of the problems is that there is no interaction. You've got an app here, a system there, a so-and-so here. It's very siloed. If AI was so flipping good, it would be able to connect itself and everything would be connected and you wouldn't have this disconnected software environment. So is there anybody working on gluing all these things together to be an all-in-one?
Well, not to fear,
solution?
Because of course there is intelligent orchestration.
Oh, that's a new one.
Yeah, yeah, so you don't like want it. These stupid RPA little bots that don't really understand anything. You want the agents to actually understand how to start working together and constructing the workflows. And this is the whole thing around agentic AI. Time for the buzzwords. And the thing about agentic AI is having these software agents that are not just these little dumb bots that are single purpose, but they understand, you're telling me I need to do something. Let's unpack that. I need to actually go and find it from this system. And it's a land of, I don't want to say, you know, wishful thinking, but to actually do that, you actually need to work in an AI environment where that kind of AI-based reasoning and all those things, that's where there's some really interesting work that's happening. But it's not really ready for prime time in the way that you would necessarily trust it and want it as a predictable orchestrator yet. It's starting to get into that area where the AI can be like, you can ask, hey, generate the workflow for me, and it'll come up with a template. It'll say, based on this category and what you've told me, here's the process that I'll construct for your sourcing process or your P2P process. That's great. But when you start getting into all the different connectors and all that kind of stuff, this is where it's actually good to have the human in the loop to actually empower the power users and the systems admins to actually go and do those mappings themselves. And you can use AI to do that, but don't trust the AI to do that real time and hope for the best. It's a new area, this agentic AI, and it's not ready for prime time yet.
That fills me with fear, Jonathan. It's like the amount of autonomy,
self-governing
that you'd have to give it and freedom that you'd have to give it to explore and interact with other systems, maybe outside the realm of your own business.
Sure.
It's just like, ooh, Terminator.
Scary
yeah,
stuff.
No, AI is, and IT is not really psyched about this whole thing. If you thought they were not happy about bringing your favorite best of breed solution to them when they're sitting in the Monty Python castle, right? When you're looking for the grail and IT is like, well, we've got one of those. It's very nice. It's got your ERP system, right? With its own LLM. You know, IT is going to have some questions.
And how far are you willing to go with deploying AI?
Well, that is the question. And I don't know, because it's really hard to answer that question.
Yeah.
You know, how much control do you give over and give up? And is that just a human thing, a resistance to
change? Is it fear of the unknown? Yeah, the unknown is so unknown, you don't know what you're not knowing.
It is, and you can predict to a certain extent what's going to happen.
One of the biggest things is creating architecture is kind of a very techie word.
Yeah.
But having little processes where you're comfortable with using that dynamic AI. So let me give you an example. When it comes to how do I sort the best relevance in a search result when I'm looking for suppliers and supplier discovery, or I'm looking for the best template, or I'm looking for the most relatable clause, or if you can kind of have that little search process, use AI and say, I think it's this because of, you know, XYZ, right? And that's the nice thing about you can now have the thing have some level of explainability. The reason why I sorted these things in this order was close. The language was closest. It's based on your personalization and your role. It can do this. You give it tasks where you're comfortable with the variation and what it comes up with. But once it comes up with the results, it's ultimately either you and or a well-defined API that goes and fires the system to actually generate the RFX, collect bids, all that kind of stuff. You have to just know how to use it in the right context so that you're shielding yourself from some of the risk and the ambiguity that comes with an inherently variable system.
We'll be right back with Pierre Mitchell from Spend Matters in just a moment.
Capella is the latest in digital category management. Capella makes creating great category strategies easy, strategies you can trust. Because Capella's intelligence is built upon 5i category management, trusted by companies the world over to deliver results. Which means when you choose Capella's guided mode, you can be confident you'll get the best possible strategy. Or switch to advanced mode and work the 5i steps. All with AI's helping hand. Make digital category management something you can trust. Search Capella Category Strategy or visit positivepurchasing.com to find out more. Capella, the guided category strategy creator.
The Procurement Show with Jonathan O'Brien.
Pierre, there's lots of tech out there, but how do we ensure that people think too? We've talked about the human in the loop, but what about the talent? What about the skills? What about the people who are going to implement the tech, use the tech, drive the tech? What's happening there?
It's interesting because we live this problem as tech analysts trying to stay current on all the technology, which means understanding procurement and the business processes and how the tech enables it, right? Is it straight up automation, decision support? And then you get into the how. So now the how really means you need to understand how is data structured in these systems? What are the different classes of systems? What are the pros and cons of different approaches? And then also just the analytics and understanding how do you analyze data, you know, et cetera. And then all the AI emerging technology around understanding LLMs and all the stuff that we've been talking about. That is a big scope of knowledge for anyone to be savvy on. So from a talent management standpoint, it is a major issue because folks are just trying to figure out, hey, how do I do a pivot table and be able to, again, use some nice drill downs and some apps or just use my ERP or source to pay app. So it's a really complicated set of knowledge that you have to be able to bring to bear. And I'm worried about it, actually, in terms of folks not asking hard questions and knowing what good actually looks like, right? Yeah. But I mean, maybe that's why we're in business, right? I mean, that's to help.
Yeah. Are we chasing technology at the risk of ignoring talent?
When we went to DPW last year, one of the conversations, when people were coming up to our stand and they were saying, we were talking about training programs, for example, one of the things that so many people said is we've been too busy chasing the technology. We've kind of forgotten to train people, or we've taken our eye off the ball and we've suddenly realized that actually we've got this big capability deficit because we haven't invested in people. And so I think companies have neglected it because they've been chasing shiny bits of tech and have just forgotten about the people or assume that maybe we don't need them anymore. I don't know. But that's what I've seen. So I've seen this sudden return to companies saying, actually, we need to be training people. We've got to do negotiation training because that's what we need right now. What about you, Pierre?
It's so funny. When you started the podcast, you were talking about screws, and we're not going to riff on the linguistics there. But the fact that we have much more sophisticated tools now and we're putting in the hands of people that if you don't actually know how to run a circular saw, but now you're giving them a six-axis CNC machine, whatever the metaphor you want to use, you know, that's a challenge. You need to actually know how to apply the tools to the right problem. So there's just one thing of just knowing what the tools do, knowing how to have them work together, and knowing how to actually apply them to what you're trying to accomplish is half the battle. So there's that kind of piece of it. The other issue, though, is when I talked about knowledge and knowledge graphs, there is this knowledge management issue. So when we think about people and their knowledge and skills and competencies, just think about the term skills and knowing how to do certain things. And a lot of those things are information related. And if you think about skills and think about Alexa, right, with Amazon and the skills that are built, This is where the whole autonomous thing and agents, it's just more and more that the tech will be able to do very specific sets of things. And the more in which a procurement organization and a person knows how to use those tools to just attack the stupid stuff that they do every day so that they can elevate their value to work on the things that they do, where they will add value to the organization, you got to stay ahead of the algorithm. So it's that being able to define knowledge in terms of skills, competencies, et cetera, lets you actually now be able to understand which skills do I want to automate in different ways and which skills do I want to retain with the human and actually start to do talent management a little bit more in a more formal way so that you can have better training and better transformation stuff on the people side, but also marry that up with the right tools to bring to bear on the tech side and bring those two things together.
One of the fears I have is that talent acquisition and skills, the foundations behind learning skills that are needed to be good at what you do, takes time. Whereas a plugin or acquiring tech solutions doesn't necessarily take years of training.
And that is the risk here, that we assume that the tech will just do everything that we need, and it will do bits of that, and some bits it's going to do better. But how do you engage the organization, drive change for a new sourcing approach? How do you actually make sure that you've got the right strategic category plan for a really complex area of spend? You know, there's stuff where actually we still need that real talent in the loop to be able to do that, I think. And I guess the question to you, Pierre, is there's a knowledge thing here that I'm worried that we'll lose. So the example that I want to give, I've worked in this industry for 30 odd years. I've helped lots of companies do category management, be really good at category management. So the experience of that, the 5i process that we've done, has been the established way of doing things. And then we developed Capella, which is the digital category management tool. So what we did is we took the experience of practicing category management and we digitized a process. That was step one. Step two, we then created algorithms that started to give it some intelligence. And then step three, you bring AI into that and help it do it much, much more. So at the center of that, we've tried to recognize that it's built on some sort of knowledge. But I'm worried how some of the tech is being created. There isn't that wisdom and knowledge that's got into the thing. Is there a risk here that we're just creating something new, but we're abandoning that real knowledge that companies have when they did it the old way, and we've lost something there?
Absolutely. I've been in the market 35 years. I started in supply chain, somehow fell into procurement in the 90s and then the consulting world, but it's kept my ADHD interest ever since. But at one of those consulting organizations, I was a knowledge steward, which was basically capturing all the knowledge that we did with clients. And yeah, it was at the PowerPoint level, and now it's gotten much more sophisticated. But this thing around modeling knowledge is really key. And I think your journey and what you do with your clients is spot on, because in the world of IT, there's always kind of two things. There's a data piece and there's a process kind of piece, right? Process and, you know, supply chains, value chains, process. Everybody understands processes. Then on the data side, and as much as people complain about data quality, absolutely true. But you have to actually know how to model the data to model and persist knowledge. So that means you need broader and deeper modeling of the data of supply markets and suppliers and cost and risk and obligations and skills themselves that you need around how do I create different processes to tie category management into sourcing execution and into SRM and all these things, right? So modeling that knowledge itself requires actually a data model and associated knowledge model, which means metadata and tagging. And that's what I was talking about, knowledge graphs. So it requires itself a competency of how do you build this knowledge, capture it, and curate it and manage it, because the humans are going to rotate through, right? And maybe less will be coming in as going out. But in doing that, you have to model and manage your data part and parcel with how you manage your data in your apps, as well as how you manage your people themselves. And that's that intersection, right, between people and tech to do this knowledge management, knowledge modeling. And that's where knowledge graphs.
Yeah,
I'm going to tell you, I think this is the key technology that's going to help AI really get better in multiple areas, because it helps LLMs work better. I mean, we could just geek out on that whole area for a while, but absolutely, knowledge modeling and management, absolutely key to the talent problem as well as to everything else.
And I guess there's another dimension to that, which is the change management bit. And one of the things I've always said when I've worked with clients is good procurement isn't about the technical stuff, whether that's traditional technical understanding of strategic methods or using technology. but it's more about change management than it is about the technical stuff. Because if it's a sourcing strategy, if it's implementing a new system, you've got to get the rest of the business to live and breathe that and get up and embrace the things that procurement's driving in.
And now it's time for this week's Ask Jonathan.
And today's Ask Jonathan comes from Ludwig Gustafsson from Gothenburg, who writes, "Dear Jonathan, and the funny one." That's me, by the way.
And the funny one.
Yeah, that's me.
Hang on a minute.
Yeah.
How are you the funny one?
Because I am.
And but did I get a funny... Am I the funny one too?
No.
Okay. But at least he remembered my name.
That's true, yeah, yeah, true. Shall I start again on that? He writes, "I'm not from procurement, but I work with procurement to buy specialist integrated circuits. The technology available to us is constantly evolving. I have many debates with my procurement friends, as I believe we must always seek to specify the latest technology in our chip design, while procurement pushed me to stick with the less new and more current and therefore cheaper technology. I said I'd write to the procurement show to get an answer."
Well, it's good to have you on board as a non-procurement person. We're getting a lot of people outside procurement listening to the procurement show from all over the world. So welcome, Ludwig. It's great to have you on board. So this is a really interesting one. And I kind of get where procurement's coming from here, because when you're buying technology or anything technology where the technology is constantly advancing, you've got to be really clear what point in that technology you want to source. It doesn't follow that you should always have the latest, greatest, best, because maybe you do need that. Maybe there's a good reason to need that. But also that will come at a price. There'll be perhaps risk there associated with having the most emerging technology. So what you've got to do is you've got to map that technology landscape. We call this doing a technology roadmap. So you look at all the different types of technology that are on the market today. So you'll have the current technology, you'll have the older technology, you'll have the emerging technology, and then you have the next new technology. You'll have this range of different technology options that you have. And what you've got to do is figure out, what does the business need? Does the business need the latest next generation technology, or does the business just need the current technology, and what's the rationale? So that's the question you've got to answer. And the example was the space shuttle that had a computer system that was probably 20 years earlier than the current computer system technology at the time. I think the space shuttle was using something like Windows 3.1 and an early version of it, because it was stable and it was fixed and it was exactly what was needed, when they could have had a much later version of how that worked. So map out the different technologies and be clear what the business requirements are and what the right technology to serve that is.
You see this a lot in defence applications,
you do.
Don't you?
Yeah. And there are different reasons for that. Often in defence is because you've got stuck on a specification and it costs too much to change it. So it's often not a conscious decision, but a legacy decision. That's bad for a different reason, because actually sometimes the next technology will be better, but you know, it's too expensive to change it.
I've heard of examples where it costs so much to get the mainframe built in the US that they're still using mainframes from the 1970s and 60s because it's yet to realize its initial expenditure.
Yeah, and maybe there's a good reason for doing that. It doesn't follow that having old technology is a bad thing, unless, of course, that's hindering what you do. So latest doesn't necessarily mean best. You've got to look at what is right for the business.
Fantastic. Good answer. Good question as well. If you've got a question for Jonathan, here's how to get in touch.
Ask Jonathan. Email your question to jonathan@theprocurementshow.com. You might be part of the next show. The Procurement Show is brought to you by Positive Purchasing and Capella, the guided category strategy creator powered by AI and 5i.
With the tech that surrounds us, do you think the change management thing is getting easier, or is it just the same?
Well, it's getting harder in terms of the level of complexity is getting harder and harder. So think about the area of third-party risk management and SRM. Think about all the stakeholders and their individual systems that they have for GRC, and talk about alphabet soup, TPRM and GRC and the ESG and VMOs and IT. And then we've got SRM and programs. How do you tie all that stuff together? And there's the poor supplier saying, I'm getting all this random interactions from all these different stakeholders across the company. That's a problem. So this is an orchestration problem to manage, but you got all these stakeholders. So how do we start working on now these problems where we're not just staying in our little process silos and actually trying to solve some bigger problems? So that's kind of a headwind. The tailwind is, the tech is getting easier to use and whatnot. But this is why folks are doing agile. They're doing fast implementations. They're really just trying to get those little wins and really just get people flexing their muscles on change management, changing how do they manage data, and also just upskilling the tech and the people themselves, cleaning data on the fly, because you're never going to solve the data quality problem with some giant data scrubbing project. Good luck doing that versus other projects. So yeah, it is that apprenticeship, if you will, on the talent side of how do we get newer folks in and also learn from them as they bring new tools and new insights, because a lot of the new MBAs and with supply management concentrations, they are not really tolerant of a lot of the old tech, and they're going to be bringing new methods to bear. Yeah. So it's that fast moving agile implementation that builds that muscle around how to use the tech to actually accomplish the outcomes.
You know, if I was a CPO for a global organization, I'd be thinking right now, gosh, I can't keep up with the acronyms.
I was thinking that anyway.
One of the questions a global CPO may well be thinking is, what's the number one thing to start considering tech-wise for my organization right now?
It's funny. I was the first procurement tech analyst back in 99 with all the dot-com stuff. And it was so funny because at the time, it was like, what was job one? Spend analytics. Where the hell is the money going? Get a basic spend cube. Supplier by category, by cost center. Where is the money got? And maybe where will the money go to actually get ahead of it? Spend planning. And it's so funny that, and it's like depressing, funny, peculiar, not funny, that we still have such crap for spend visibility. Getting the house in order and just helping all the budget owners know where their money is going. Spend management. Spend is what you pay. The supply value is what you get. You got to start with spend so that they can understand, here's where the money's going. Are you getting the value, the bang for your buck, with your spend? Those fundamentals have not changed. And then you overlay, well, what does that mean around what you want from that spend? And of course, bringing all the appropriate centralization and scale and all the things that you want to do as part of the transformation. But ultimately, the fundamentals don't change. It's bang for the buck, spend, supply, helping stakeholders get more value from the amazing supply markets that are becoming more and more digital. How do you get value from that and bring that to help the organization? And that's a challenge because those markets are getting more complicated as they get more digital.
And it's so refreshing to hear you say that, actually, because for a minute there, I thought you were going to say, you need the latest generative AI thing with a three-letter acronym I hadn't heard of, but you didn't. You went right back to, actually, you got to understand where the money's flowing.
That's basic.
That made me think. It is, but you know, companies don't do it. And it's just made me realize that I still come across companies that I work with that start by saying, you know, we want to transform procurement, but we actually have no idea what we're spending. And still, in this age of generative AI with all sorts of crazy things, companies still don't know where the money flows, which is incredible.
Yeah, so that's just the value flow, right? The spend and the goods and the services. But the other thing is, the whole reason why this whole area around intake management has become very hot is that procurement and the other functions are individually pretty poor at internal CRM to their other stakeholders and to folks in the business units. If we're service providers to help our budget owners get more value from spend, we're not really a great service provider. And we're not really adopting that world-class CRM-like experience to our stakeholders. And it's the same with legal, and it's the same with HR, and it's the same with IT, and it's the same with finance. So we all need to get on the same page in terms of working together to serve those stakeholders better to do that. And this is where the whole orchestration thing of actually syncing together all these different functions when you're just trying to do supplier qualification and tuning that process to the nature of the category or category management is a challenge. So that's kind of where the orchestration is just a fancier way of saying tech-enabled coordination and management and governance of these processes. So that stakeholder-facing interface is an important area because we're not necessarily a delight experience to work with procurement.
Pierre, what does this landscape look like in, say, 5 years' time? What can we expect?
Certainly, you're going to have continued churn in the market. That's never going to go away. When you have this emerging technology like around Gen AI and particularly around agentic AI, and there's going to continue to be this expansion and contraction in the universe. And there will be contraction. There's no doubt about it. There's only so much space that all the 1,500 vendors that are out there are going to be able to exist on their own. But in terms of the broader foundational change, the app vendors, like the mega app vendors, they're going to continue to bake AI and intelligence into just what they do. and just have some of that baked right in. There's a shakeout that needs to happen with the gorillas, as I talked about, the hyperscalers and the open AIs and all that's going to continue to happen. So the good news is that you're just going to get more and more capability that just becomes available. Now, you got to understand what the cost implication, right? Because it doesn't come for free, particularly around the tokens and the costs for this. So you got to get efficient in how the AI is used. I will say the one major prediction that I think is going to be something that not a lot of people are talking about is the importance of knowledge graphs and how you model data independent of the app better and create actually almost a next gen architecture. And what I mean by that is right now, it's just, hey, best of breed versus suites versus, it's a stupid argument because what you're still doing is you're just throwing more and more and more apps at the problem. And there's no magical AI hub or connectors that are just going to just make it auto magically connect together because you're fragmenting, you're copying and fragmenting the data models of all these apps that you're just throwing at the problem. So you're making it worse. So you have to have something that sits on top on how you model the data independent of how the data are stored in those systems. So this is the area where knowledge graphs, which is really around this whole thing around Web 3.0, if you want to go back in time, but how do we democratize a lot of this technology so we can actually own this a bit better? Because right now, all we're doing is we're just renting the apartments to have our data as the data tenants that we're living in. And ultimately, you want to build your own house and have control of your own destiny of the design. And this whole area around knowledge graphs is going to be a really important game changer in helping democratize these solutions over time. And it really helps with LLM and Gen AI by bringing those worlds together of the LLMs and the systems. So that's a very specific prediction around that technology. That's going to be a game changer, and you're going to see it more and more in supply chain and all that kind of stuff.
Brilliant.
Jonathan, do you reckon you've been scraped?
I think I probably have many times, actually.
Yes, me too. Have you been scraped?
Yeah, certainly. Anything that you put out on the internet is going to train the AI even more. So anytime we put something else out there, we are inherently all getting scraped to build the new virtual version. But maybe it's not a bad thing. You have to go into the light willingly and build yourself a nice virtual AI version of yourself.
Nice, so, you know, Jonathan is going to be called Pedantic AI. The reason why is because I think if AI has been analysing the procurement show, I really think it's my role to put it off the scent and try
confuse it
and colour all the knowledge that it's got to protect our knowledge, guys.
And stop the hallucinations.
Add to the hallucinations is what I want to do.
This is the beauty of the AI. So you could do something like Google has a thing called Notebook LM, powered by Gemini. And you could take whatever your content is, not only summarize it, but you can generate FAQs off of it. You can have this NPR-like conversation like you guys are doing back and forth right now. You can just get that at the push of a button. You give it some content, and then suddenly you've got two virtual avatars.
I'm worried.
The tragic thing is it'd be damn sight more interesting to listen to than us.
It probably would be, actually. Cleverer, too.
They don't have the accent yet. You're going to pick that whatever localized accent you want, like with the navigation, right? So once it gets there,
Those who are in the UK, it can't do West Country.
Yeah.
Much as it probably couldn't do Texan or anything like that. It'd
so we could do the first West Country. the first West Country AI.
And
I can say that because I'm from Cornwall.
Exactly, yes. So the reason why I'm talking about content that might throw AI off the scent is because I want to talk about takeaways now, Pierre. This weekend, I think I might go for fish and chips. But what are your three takeaways?
Just talking with you guys, you know, we're nerding out here, right? And talking about all this stuff. But
I love nerding.
You know, even with folks who are in the know, we're educating ourselves on technology all the time. So there's a level of humility that you need to bring to know that you're not going to know it all. And that's really tough for procurement because you never want to show your cards that you don't know it all, right? Of course you know it all because you don't want to give up the leverage. There's a certain humility that you need to bring as you look at the technology that is coming in and to understand how it's really used and to bring in different perspectives, because the more in which you just take the pre-chewed, this is how we view things, or hype cycles, or what everybody's saying, or it's stupid, you have then basically stopped thinking for yourself. And given what's happened, you know, with us here in the US recently, critical thinking and education and engaging lots of folks is an important thing to really master, because if you're not charting that destiny and you're not having a level of humility and engagement and conversation and knowledge transfer, other people will define your future for you. And that's not really where you want to be. And that's innately just a very disempowering and depressing kind of future. So let's go have at it and eat whatever we want, but let's bring some folks with us and enjoy it together.
Pierre Mitchell, it's been a delight to have you on the Procurement Show, and it's been great to nerd out on techie stuff.
Yes, absolutely.
And I've learned something. I have learned a new phrase, augmented AI.
Oh, yeah. I'm going to look at what a rag is.
Agentic AI, sorry. Agentic AI. So that's AI, my learning and my takeaway and from
knowledge,
today.
What was it? Knowledge graphs.
Knowledge graphs?
Knowledge graphs. I'm going to draw my own tonight.
Yeah, so brilliant. Thank you so much. It's been a pleasure.
You're welcome. Happy to be with you guys anytime. You know where to find me.
You've been listening to The Procurement Show. Contact us by email, hello@theprocurementshow.com. Connect with us on LinkedIn. Search for The Procurement Show and visit us at theprocurementshow.com. The Procurement Show is brought to you by Positive Purchasing, transforming procurement with exceptional tools and advanced training. Produced in the UK by Fresh Air Studios. The Procurement Show is copyright Positive Purchasing. All rights reserved.
Report, Captain Bywell.
Sir, we've recovered one.
What? A Proclius?
Yes, sir.
Good work, Bywell. Where did you find it?
That was easy, sir. We looked at the companies with good strategic procurement. They all use Proclius. Look, I've got it here.
Quick, man. Open it up. Aha, it's got toolkits, category management, SRM, sustainable procurement, and look, red sheet negotiation.
Here, sir, an academy with a skills assessment and a virtual learning environment.
Great Scott, this thing has Capella too. It can create category strategies for you.
And Ruby, sir, the AI negotiation co-pilot.
Bywell, you'll get a medal for this.
Proclius, the AI-powered platform for strategic procurement. Search Proclius or visit positivepurchasing.com to find out more.